anger, mistrust, gaping political division. We're breaking down Election Day, what is known at this moment. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer. Kent, thanks for being here. You know, it goes without saying that the 2020 election has been turbulent. Were you one of the people who watched returns last night with excitement and or anxiety? What emotions coursed through your veins? Could you sleep? Legal experts suggest the likelihood of lawsuits in one or more battleground states. What do you think of election litigation? What do you think of President Trump falsely declaring victory and calling the election a fraud on the American public? Join in 800-642-1234. Mike Wagner is a professor in the UW-Madison School of Journalism and Mass Communication. Mike, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
All right. So top line observations, as you see the vote tallying still being done in Wisconsin. What do you make of it?
This has been a chaotic campaign, and it is a normal counting of votes. This is exactly what should be happening. Votes should be counted carefully and within the laws as expressed by each state. That's what's happening. It's slower than we all would like, of course, because we want to know what the results are. But right now, what's happening is exactly what should be happening. So far, all of the states that have been called have basically been called in the way that we thought they would be called. The states that we thought were the competitive battleground states are the competitive battleground states. Some of those states, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, are closer in the margin than the polling predicted, which is making this, I think, even more exciting and or anxiety producing and or consequential, depending upon how you think about things. But right now, it's a normal election that feels chaotic, but it's normal. This is what should be happening.
What did you make of turnout for Wisconsin in particular?
Well, I think that it will have the most votes ever cast in Wisconsin. I'm not sure if turnout as a percentage will be higher than it was in 2004, which I think was our high water mark as a state.
Mm-hmm.
But it ought to be really close. But turnout was high. People are engaged in this election in our state, as is always the case in Wisconsin, which always has high turnout compared to the rest of the country, sometimes the highest, largely due to the state's tradition in civic engagement and the rules of elections in Wisconsin, which allow for same-day registration.
You know, almost 2 million people in Wisconsin voted early. We saw the Wisconsin Elections Commission sending out ballot applications to all registered voters, something it hasn't done before. What do you make of the surge in absentee voting in the pandemic?
Well, I think the pandemic had something to do with that, right? So many folks felt that it was simply safer for their health and the health of their community to cast a vote by mail early or to drop off their ballot early at a designated location. And then, of course, the parties, especially the Democratic Party, but both parties in Wisconsin, more so than around the country, where President Trump is in some ways kind of, you know, diminished early voting by falsely claiming that it's fraudulent when it isn't. But what's been happening, I think, is that the parties in our state have realized that banking votes is a good strategy. It's a way to make sure that your supporters are casting their vote. Of course, the early votes come with some risk as to whether they arrive on time if they're sent in the mail and whether they're filled out properly so that they are counted. But it's definitely a trend we've seen over the past couple of elections. There's more of this, and we're likely to see more of it in the future.
Mike Wagner is with us, journalism professor at UW-Madison. We're unpacking Election Day results with your reaction throughout the hour. Are you satisfied by what you saw on Election Day? What was it like to vote amid the pandemic? How did you cast your ballot? Tell us your experience, 800-642-1234. Mark is joining us from Wisconsin Dells. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I just wanted to call in to voice a complaint about all the calls I had at home and on my cell phone. It seemed like hourly by both political campaigns and by pollsters for weeks on end. And I finally got angry and basically screamed and hollered at some people over the phone, which I don't like to do. And somebody finally said, well, then I'll take you off along with those lists. And then a couple of days ago, I quit receiving these calls, but I really felt terribly harassed. And I think this needs to be illegal. I think there needs to be some kind of regulation.
Mark, let me ask you this, Mark. Did you participate in the polls when you got those calls?
Generally not. I mean, I pressed stop. I mean, I checked the back stop a lot, but then I'd get the call from another city or someplace else or another person, so it didn't seem to make any difference. And, you know, I just think it was just total harassment. You know, and I'm driving 100 hours a week. I don't need that kind of harassment.
Mark, thank you for the call. Mike, what do you make of that? Mark being inundated by campaign calls and calls to participate in polls.
Right. Well, campaigns, of course, have two major goals when they're contacting people, one of which is to turn out their voters. And so if they've identified Mark or anyone else as a likely voter for their side, they're going to keep calling until they're persuaded that your vote's been cast early and banked, or that you're going to show up for sure on election day. And then the other reason is persuasion. And so if campaigns have identified you as an unlike or as a voter who has not yet made a choice, they want to put their best foot forward and try to persuade folks to vote for them. And so given how cheap and easy it is to text, we see a ton of that. Politicians are not likely to take away their ability to do that by law, as much as many of us might like not having to receive all of those texts. And in the case of pollsters, you know, it's important and useful to get snapshots of what people are thinking. It's useful to be able to break down what people believe and what they plan to do based on different demographic characteristics and geographic characteristics. But polls are not votes. Votes are what are cast on election day and legally by early and absentee voting.
Mark, I'm wondering, did the calls do anything to persuade you as a voter, or were they just, you know, sheer annoyance?
Well, they made me angry. They were sheer annoyance. It made me think a lot of Hamlet, right? Polonius says to Laertes, and this above all things, to thine own self be true. I don't feel like it's anybody's business to know how I'm going to vote or what I'm thinking. And so, you know, I guess I'll have to turn off my phones or get rid of my accounts, because I just don't really want to participate at that level in anything political, period.
So, Mike, I want to, you know, getting insights there from Mark in how, you know, the campaigns structured and reached voters, and polling being one thing that all eyes were on this election cycle. You had predicted Biden would get 335 electoral college votes. How do you feel about the polls today?
Well, I think that they are by and large pretty close, but we don't exactly know how well they performed. It looks like the evidence is that they overshot Joe Biden's total and undershot Donald Trump's total, but within general margins of error. It's always useful to go back and see where there were key differences in what the polling data were showing and what the actual results end up being. It's still a possibility for Vice President Biden to end up in the 320 range, but I don't think that's the most likely outcome, but it's possible. President Trump could get up to 284 electoral votes. I think that if President Trump had won the popular vote, we ought to be really worried about polls, but it looks like that's not in any danger of happening. It looks like Vice President Biden has a lead that is probably insurmountable in terms of the popular vote, but the popular vote doesn't elect the president.
And we're going to pause there with UW-Madison journalism professor Mike Wagner, our guide to election 2020 takeaways, morning after, your thoughts on everything you saw. Races, rhetoric, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. What are you watching for after Election Day? We're talking about it here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Do you think it is a big deal not to have the results of this election on Election Day? Or are you in the be patient camp? This is normal. Were you a voter who felt intimidated at a polling place or outside waiting in line? What transpired? Were you able to vote in person with no wait, plenty of PPE to go around? What was your experience at the polls? 800-642-1234. We have UW-Madison journalism professor Mike Wagner, who is with us for the hour. Mike, you watch very closely the rhetoric, certainly rhetoric on the campaign trail, misinformation, disinformation. We saw the president overnight call the election a fraud on the American public. What do you see out of that type of talk?
The president is lying, and it's dangerous to hear the president lie in that terrible way. The election is not over. The election is proceeding as normal. It's normal to count votes. It's normal to keep counting them after Election Day. You know, everybody's already cast their ballot. No one new will be casting a ballot now. What we're doing is casting the ballots of those who, you know, have already voted. So imagine with 3 seconds left in a Packers game, that the Packers are on their own 40-yard line. Aaron Rodgers drops back, throws a 60-yard bomb down the field. The clock reads zero, but the play is still going. That's where we are. All the votes have been cast, and we're just counting them. That's totally normal, and it is exactly what we should be doing in our democracy.
So out of line to call or to claim the election at this point.
Way out of line. There's no reason for the president to be doing that.
We saw a number of presidential visits here amid the pandemic. Trump campaign in Wisconsin, something like, you know, five times over the past couple weeks. How much of an effect do you think that has on the race?
There's not a lot of evidence that visits correlate with votes. What some things that visits can do is generate local news coverage. Local news coverage is the number one place where people get their information in Wisconsin about politics. That's something we found in surveys we've conducted at the Center for Communication and Civic Renewal here at UW. And so dominating the news cycle and getting your issues out to as many people as possible, even beyond your rally, but on the news is an important thing. But the visits themselves are less important in the overall result.
The local news journalists had to counter quite a bit of misinformation, disinformation, and trying to make sure that the information was accurate that they were putting out. What has that been like this election?
I think that in terms of the performance on election night, local journalists have done a really outstanding job. I've talked to a variety of newspaper and television and radio stations around our state, and journalists are reporting accurate results. They're pointing out when claims that people are making are false, if they are false, and they're pointing out that this is what we do in an election. And, you know, in terms of the coverage during the campaign, it's the case that across the country and in our state, there was more attention given to President Trump than was given to Vice President Biden in terms of news coverage. That, on the one hand, that's not surprising. He's the president. The president can generate news attention beyond the campaign. But it was also the case in 2016 when Donald Trump wasn't the president. And so there does appear to be a little bit of a bias toward paying attention to President Trump as compared to other people seeking office, whether that was in the 2016 primaries, the 2016 general election, or the 2020 general election.
We have a journalism professor, Mike Wagner, here from UW-Madison as we look at Election Day in Wisconsin. He researches democracy in America. How do you feel about this election cycle? What emotions were running through you yesterday as you cast your ballot and as you watched returns? 800-642-1234. Eileen is here from Madison. Hi, Eileen. What did you observe?
Well, I didn't have any trouble at all. It was in and out. I went and voted, and there was no line. I didn't have any trouble at all. But beforehand, I did receive tons of mail and tons of calls, and I just said, nope, I'm due. The rest of my family voted early, and I come from a large family, and I just said, no, I'm going to vote on the 3rd, and I didn't have any trouble. And I voted at 7:30 a.m. in the morning.
So you basically tried to ignore as much as you could the mailings that were showing up in your inbox, showing up on your phone?
Correct. But my brothers and sisters, they all voted early.
Uh-huh.
They took their ballots in and voted early. And I, not me, I just said, no, I'm just going to go do it in person. And I just felt a lot more confident with my ballot being in the right place at the right time. And I didn't have any trouble at all.
Were you concerned about the pandemic? Were you, you know, in terms of mask wearing and feeling safe?
No, not at all. I used sanitizer. I had the mask on. I had a very good mask and I didn't have any trouble. Everybody else had a mask on and I stayed on the X and social distancing and they had the, you know, they had, everybody followed protocol and it wasn't any trouble at all. But I could see that, you know, I did watch the media. I mean, I could see on television that there was other cities that did have lines, but
But you had a seamless experience. Eileen, thank you so much for that observation. You know, Mike, voting went swimmingly for Eileen, felt safe doing it, had the masks and followed all the protocols, stepping where she should have been on the floor. And I'm wondering, you know, as you watch how Wisconsin did this election, what did we learn in the pandemic?
Well, I think we learned a lot from the April primary, where we greatly improved the number of places that people could vote in person, especially in Milwaukee, for example. I thought we had way more volunteers over the months. We've gotten better at living with the pandemic, and we're better at washing our hands. We're better at wearing masks. And so there were lots more volunteers. A lot of young people were volunteering, which was terrific. And I had the same experience Eileen did. Short line. Everybody was very safe. Lots of opportunities to wash your hands. It was a great experience. And what we've seen across the country is that, you know, by and large, the voting experience proceeded as we would hope that it would.
Let's bring in Corey, who is joining us from Shatek. Hi, Corey. What was your experience like?
The voting for me went really well. I did it in person. I maybe filled a little bit of a line, so within 20 minutes, we were in and out. So that went easy. But the question that I have is on the mail-in votes. I received three in the mail myself, and so did my girlfriend, who actually works for a post office. That's how I knew exactly what they were. And I know of a few others. And then that makes me concerned because as a follow-up, when we had that special election, a friend of mine was in an accident, so he did a mail-in Epstein thing, and he asked me to witness that, so I put my signature on that, and I thought for sure somebody would have followed up to make sure that it was for real, but I've never even got asked if I was the guy that signed it or not. So I was just wondering how all that works. How do they... follow up on these witness ballots.
Corey, thank you for that. So, you know, Corey, voting in person ultimately, but really questioning the process of the witness signature, Mike, on the ballot envelope.
Yeah, that is a feature in Wisconsin where we have to have a witness, you know, sign as well. And I know in a pandemic that can be a challenging thing. A neighbor of mine lives alone and was worried about asking, you know, me or another neighbor to come over and witness their ballot signing just because of the pandemic. But that is our rule here in our state.
What did you make about robocalls in Michigan telling people to stay home and stay safe? Did you see that?
There has been some reporting of efforts of mis and disinformation, both in terms of robocalls, some texts, social media posts as well. And these things happen in American elections. They are dangerous for democracy. And we can only hope that the people who received those messages ignored them and proceeded as we would hope that they would. But those things have the potential to keep people home. And in states like Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania, where the margin is razor thin, any number of those small things could be incredibly important with respect to who our next president is.
So certainly watching those possible instances where, you know, voters are, you know, given incorrect information at minimum, but certainly voter intimidation also, you know, something that you want to watch very closely.
We want to watch for voter intimidation. We want to watch for voter suppression and when states remove people from the voter rolls for no good reason. These are all things we should pay attention to as engaged citizens.
UW-Madison journalism professor Mike Wagner studies misinformation and political rhetoric. He's here to unpack the results on this morning after Election Day. Were you a poll watcher? What was your experience like? Did you volunteer as a poll worker? Have you been a poll worker for years, or were you new to it? What compelled you to help in carrying out the election process in Wisconsin amid COVID? Be part of this hour, 800-642-1234. We'll be back with your thoughts on the presidential race, your experience at the polls, right after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. You're with us as we spend the hour on the integrity of the electoral process and the events that happened on Election Day. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What we do know is Wisconsin shattered early voting records. Clerks counted more than 1.9 million absentee ballots that arrived before Election Day. The campaigns were closely watching for any irregularities. The U.S. Postal Service turned down a federal judge's order yesterday to sweep mail processing facilities, ensuring no ballots were left behind in a dozen postal districts, including some swing states. What do you want to share about Election Day? Are you satisfied with results so far? What was it like to vote in a pandemic? Join in 800-642-1234. We have Mike Wagner with us, journalism professor at UW-Madison, and he stays with us for the hour. Mike, we had Jack from Caledonia called in, couldn't stay with us. And Jack thinks that President Trump's tweets might have turned off undecided voters who weren't part of his base. And Jack is wondering, what does your research and surveying say about the effect of President Trump's tweets on voters?
Well, I think that to the best we can tell, the president's tweets tend to fall on partisan ears. So people who already know that they like the president respond positively to his tweets and retweet them and share them and like them. And those who don't like the president, you know, do not respond favorably to those tweets. But most people who are undecided voters are not the kind of people who are following politics on Twitter. They might hear about the tweets on the news because news organizations do cover the president's social media behavior regularly. But, you know, factors related to the state of the economy, the management of the pandemic, and people's good old-fashioned partisanship are the things that are really driving most votes in this cycle. Among undecided voters, sometimes there are changes based upon whether local conditions are improving or getting worse in terms of education, healthcare, and the economy, and maybe the management of the pandemic. But by and large, people look like they voted with their party affiliation in this election, as they usually do.
I want to spend a moment here on third party candidates, because with official tallies pretty much compiled across Wisconsin, and the analysis is showing both President Trump and former Vice President Biden logging greater percentages of the vote than in 2016, signifying maybe this decline in support for third party candidates. What do you see going on there?
I think the third party candidates this year got much less attention. And so I think they were less salient in voters' minds when they went to cast the ballot, their ballot. In 2016, both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton were more disliked than they were liked, which can also be correlated with the idea that some folks then might look to a third party candidate for someone to cast a vote toward. But in 2020, Joe Biden's favorables were above water. And so it could be that those factors all kind of mixed together to help us understand why the third party candidates got less support this year as compared to 2016.
Well, let's bring in Mary now, joining us from Waukesha. And Mary, I understand that you worked at the polls. What was your role?
Yeah, so I actually counted, like I ripped open and counted the absentee ballots, basically just by feeding them into the machine, as any regular ballot is counted. And on Saturday, I actually assisted with numbering them as well. So I had done both of those roles.
How did it go for you? What was it like?
Yeah, I thought it was really organized. I thought it went really well. We were done feeding most of our absentee ballots into the machine pretty early in the day, but more came in later in the day. It was interesting to see because we counted them at, at the voting district, and we had a line out the door, onto the street, and it was interesting seeing that, but then also comparison to counting these absentee ballots. I think we had somewhere around 1,700, so...
Did you find that you and your fellow poll workers were working together? What was it like to have poll observers there?
Oh, yeah, I definitely think we were working together. I think it was good to have poll observers. I think it's good to, make sure that it's all safe and that there's, people witnessing what's going on. I mean, we had two people, doing something at once. So, there was no one person who wasn't being observed at any time.
Mary, thank you so much for sharing what it was like for you being a poll worker. We appreciate it. Mike, what is the role of poll observers and their importance in the process?
Well, observers help keep an eye on the process, and poll workers are absolutely foundational and critical to the functioning of our democracy. So thank you, Mary, for doing that and to everyone else who did it. It's thankless, important work. And so we should say thank you. And the observers can also help play a role. These poll workers are not paid. These are volunteers who are showing up and trying to do their part to serve the democracy. And so all humans are imperfect. And the more eyes we have on things, the better.
Bringing in Mark now, joining us from Rock Springs. Hi, Mark. What was your experience like casting your ballot?
Well, we're from a small village, so there was no lines. We just in and out.
And everyone really knows each other.
Yeah. Everybody knows, yeah. I guess my question is we really thought about with the coronavirus going on about doing an absentee, but I guess I really question it, that how do they verify that the people that are on the ballot are actually legitimate people that should be voting, and who background checks these, or how do they verify them?
Wait, so you're wondering who checks?
Say if somebody in the family had passed away, but yet they still got an absentee ballot in the mail, what's stopping them from filling that out and having somebody else sign it? Or how do you know? How do you know that those are verified people that should be voting?
Right. So Mark is wondering, Mike, about the integrity of that. If someone passes away in the family, what happens to that ballot?
If they hadn't voted and sent it in, then the ballot shouldn't be cast. I suppose, it's possible that someone would then want to cast a fraudulent vote. But if they did that, someone else would have to then fraudulently verify that it was done, and deaths are a public record. And so to me, that's the kind of shenanigans that would get caught and get people into trouble. And to the larger point, there is not evidence that there is systematic voter fraud behavior in the American electorate. In fact, most times when there is a case that is first thought of as voter fraud, it turns out to be what ends up being an honest mistake, where someone shows up at the wrong ward because their ward moved or they moved, or their driver's license expired and so they didn't have the right ID. So it's just not the case in the United States of America that systematic voter fraud is a thing.
We have Mike Wagner here with us from the UW-Madison School of Journalism, digging into Election Day results, what we know so far, vote totaling still happening in Wisconsin and elsewhere around the country, by the way. We're looking at how the election process had played out yesterday with your thoughts, your experience, 800-642-1234. Mike, college life has been completely upended by the pandemic. College campuses are nowhere the same. How significant was the youth vote this year, and what was that like in the pandemic?
Well, it was very different in the pandemic. A lot of my students were dedicated to trying to turn out the youth vote, and we do things on campus like the Big Ten Voter Challenge and other sorts of things to try to help students register and know their rights and know how to get registered to vote and how to vote legally. You know, these are things that are super important in the country. It looks, according to exit polling, like 18 to 29-year-olds were about 17% of the electorate. They were engaged and maybe more engaged than usual, but everybody was more engaged than usual. So once again, in a year where more young people showed an interest, it coincided with all the other age groups showing an interest, which doesn't increase the relative power of the youth vote. It just kind of keeps it where it was.
Yeah. I want to look toward Florida now. Some surprise out of Florida that, you know, had expected Democratic turnout for Biden in South Florida. What can you tell us about Latino voters and, you know, this particular voting bloc and this question about Hispanics being monolithic or not?
Yeah, Hispanic voters are not monolithic and have not been in American political elections. In particular, in Florida, in Miami-Dade County, the Cuban-American vote really shifted toward Trump as compared to 2016. He made major inroads there and had done a pretty extensive radio advertising campaign in that part of the state. That seemed to have paid off. There's also some suggestion of some different mis- and disinformation campaigns in that part of the country. But we know that President Trump purposefully campaigned for that Cuban vote and improved upon it greatly in Miami-Dade County, which I think is where a lot of the change in result in that particular part of Florida was kind of in action last night.
In action, one of the swing states, Florida. But what are you seeing elsewhere in the country as Florida came in early as a swing state? But what about the others?
In terms of the Hispanic and Latino vote, about two-thirds for Joe Biden. It looks like that particular demographic made up upwards of 13% of the electorate, and exit polling suggests kind of a 2-to-1 support for Biden. So not monolithic, 2 out of 3, but certainly not, you know, 5 out of 6 or something like that.
As you step back and you look at the swing states in our country, is there anything that surprises you about what is considered a battleground state right now?
It's a little surprising to me that Georgia is a battleground state, partially because so many voters who were more likely to vote for Democrats had been removed from the voter rolls in recent years. But even so, that state is very close, and that's a bit of a surprise. It's a little surprising that Wisconsin is as close as it is, given the polling that our group has done, that the Elections Research Center has done, that the Marquette Law Poll has done. And so that's a little bit surprising as well, at least in terms of that evidence.
We have Mike Wagner, UW-Madison journalism professor who studies how well democracy functions, and a specimen, of course, is the 2020 election. Still time to talk about key takeaways in how you interpreted turnout, how you interpreted results, rhetoric, pandemic preparations at the polls. All fair game to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Mike Wagner here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Mike Wagner. He's a UW-Madison journalism professor. Are you concerned about a question of legitimacy in the process? Is our country on the right or wrong track? What do you point to, and what do you make of the historically high turnout? Still time to talk about all of this. 800-642-1234. Mike Wagner stays with us for 10 more minutes. You know, Mike, we saw a couple of U.S. Senate seats flip last night. What did you see there out of Colorado? We saw a flip Alabama as well.
Yeah, Alabama was expected when Doug Jones, who was the incumbent who lost, won his election in a special election. It was against a very controversial candidate who had a lot of personal baggage. And so Jones won then, but then had lost to a popular former football coach. In Alabama, you know, pretty much as expected. In Colorado, John Hickenlooper defeated incumbent Senator Cory Gardner. Hickenlooper, 2020 presidential candidate, and also a popular, you know, governor in Colorado as well, or former governor as well. And so, not super surprising to see that result. It looks like it's a pretty difficult path for the Democrats to take over the Senate now, given. What it looks like in Maine and in Georgia, and in that Lindsey Graham held onto his seat in South Carolina.
Yeah, so you know, some Senate races still up in the air, and so you're thinking at this point, it looks like Democrats aren't poised to make a majority in the Senate.
It doesn't look that way. It's mm-hmm. it's still possible, mm-hmm. but it looks like we'll see 51-49.
Let's take another call now. Mike is joining us from Viroqua. Hi, Mike. What was your situation in voting? What did you experience?
Oh, well, I voted by mail, but that is not why I'm calling. I was just wondering about the voter fraud situation. And I'm wondering if I'm the only person who feels like the accusation is that the left is doing the fraudulent voting, wherein you have a Republican president who actually suggested that his followers should try fraudulently voting by sending in a mail-in vote and then going and vote in person. So why is the finger always seem to be pointed at the left, or am I just the only person thinking that?
Mike, I want to respond there to Mike and Viroqua about the issue of voter fraud and what came up.
Yeah, I would say that in general, concerns about the integrity of the vote, you know, are tend to be more expressed by Republicans. They tend to favor voter ID laws, for example. They tend to favor shorter periods for early and absentee voting. That's especially true in our state. And so it's the case that they tend to make more political hay out of that issue than Democrats do. Democrats tend to be more bullish on the functioning of the electoral administration system. But yeah, Mike from Viroqua makes a good point in that President Trump has openly talked about and, you know, and by some measures encouraged people to engage in voter fraud. He falsely has made claims about the results of this election, which where we're still counting the votes in several key states. And so that point is well taken.
Bringing in Benjamin now in Grantwood. Hi, Benjamin. What are your thoughts on Election Day?
Hi. Well, I just wanted to just say kind of what my experience was this year. My father had cancer, and he was in a nursing home, and we both voted absentee, and he passed away last week on the 27th.
Sorry.
And thank you. And so I looked up the state statute, and yeah, it said that since the ballot isn't cast until Election Day, if the person passes away in between mailing in the absentee and Election Day, then that ballot isn't counted. So I immediately called our town clerk and notified her right away. So I just wanted to add that to the conversation, that was kind of how it works here in Wisconsin anyway.
Yeah. Benjamin, thank you for sharing that. Appreciate it. Mary is next in Cumberland. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
Hi.
I just have a question. I'm a registered Democrat. I voted a month early by absentee ballot, and yet I received three messages, one from President Obama. These are robocalls after 5:30 last night telling me that my vote had not been counted. And does that just mean that they hadn't gotten around to counting it? Because I looked on myvote.com and it said it was received. Does anybody know?
No, Mary, thank you for that. Mike, what do you make of that?
We're flying a little blind here, but my best guess is that if you went online and tracked your ballot and saw that it had been received, it's going to be counted. You can be confident that it's going to be counted. The robocalls, of course, are trying to drive as much voter turnout as they can, and those are not the best places to look for the information. The best place is the official state source, which you did, and so you should be confident that your vote will be counted so long as you followed all of the rules related to those ballots.
Interesting, the message that Mary heard there on those robocalls as well, and certainly Mary calling into question her own vote when she hears that messaging, Mike.
Yeah, it's something that I think is concerning, and that we ought to be able to find ways to not sow confusion amongst our citizens as we're casting ballots. We don't need the president, for example, saying that the election is over when it is not. We're still counting the votes as we always do, because that's what we normally do and that's how we're supposed to do things. It's frustrating, as many of your callers have expressed, to be getting umpteen robocalls and texts and emails and all of that sort of thing. And, you know, there's got to be a better way to do this, but right now, this is the way we do this.
We're talking with UW-Madison journalism professor Mike Wagner, looking at how Election Day unfolded in America this morning after, as vote tallies still coming in, especially in Wisconsin, which we saw record high absentee ballots. Bringing in Douglas now in Wheeler. Hi, Douglas. What was your experience?
I'm calling about a question related to accuracy of the electronic tally machines, that it's possible to get them reprogrammed so that they miscount, and that without it's well within the margin of error poll to slightly change a Biden to a Trump vote.
All right, so Douglas here concerned about those tallying machines, which, Mike, are not connected to the internet.
Right. It's there's no evidence that happens. And so it's not something we should worry about until there's incontrovertible evidence that tells us we should worry about it.
Are you worried at all about if a machine gets jammed, or what is the protocol around that?
Yeah, there are always things that happen, right? Green Bay is known for paper mills, and they had a paper and ink issue last night, you know, which delayed the counting for the city of Green Bay until today. And so things always happen, but these aren't systematic examples of malfeasance. That's what we ought to be the most worried about. People are always going to make an error or two. That kind of thing happens. Systematic malfeasance is what we need to watch for, and there's not evidence of that in the counting of the votes.
We have just a minute left, but with results still coming in, what are you watching for today, and what can we expect as we watch the election results unfold in terms of the timing of all this?
We can expect it to take some time. Wisconsin continues to come in. We're almost all the way home there, but there's still some more counting to do. Pennsylvania may well take a couple of days, given how they count early and absentee ballots. And in all of the states that remain, it could take anywhere between 1 and 3 or 4 or 5 days. And so we just need to be patient and trust the process and not jump to any conclusions until we know who won.
So just stay patient, which is really hard to do because we live in a society where we just want things when we don't want things. We want them right away.
I want them to know now. Right. But we need to be patient.
Mike, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Mike Wagner is a professor at UW-Madison School of Journalism and Mass Communication, where he studies political communication. Just ahead, it is 1A, where the election results roundup continues. We're bringing you what we know as we know it and talking with you. That is 1A next. I'm Kate Archer Kent. This is The Morning Show, this morning after Election Day, and you're with us on the Ideas Network.